But I want to kind of begin and just kind of provide a little bit of an overview. And Krishna, you know, we've had the idea of immunity and anti-cancer therapy for a long time. We've used allogeneic transplant. We have checkpoint inhibitors. We have vaccines. Can you talk a little bit of sort of about the history of immunology and cancer immunology and how that sort of led to the thinking that led to CAR T?
Yeah, it's fascinating. So allogeneic CAR T cells, allogeneic transplantation was first successfully done in 1968. And what's amazing is, you know, we think about B cells, what they do, and T cells, obviously, like CAR T cells. We actually didn't know until 1968 that B cells and T cells were different subsets of cells. So the allogeneic transplant era actually started in the 1950s. We started curing people in the late 1960s. We actually didn't know what a T cell was. And we really didn't know much about the biology of T cells till 10 to 15 years after we were reliably curing patients with allogeneic transplant. And that's actually interesting because we actually thought that what was curing patients with allogeneic transplant was super high doses of chemotherapy and radiation. And it wasn't until the mid-1980s to 1990 when people started doing transplants, taking out the T cells, thinking that, well, that'll prevent the donor cells from attacking the recipient, causing what we call graft versus host disease. And by doing that, we did decrease graft versus host disease, but we found that relapses doubled. So that really told us that, hey, wait a minute, T cells, you know, are not just passengers in an allogeneic transplant, but actually can cure cancer. And then fast forwarding now, you know, we have these amazing ways of either taking the brakes off T cells with CAR T cell, with checkpoint inhibitors, or genetically manipulating T cells and expanding them outside the body, which is what we're talking about today. So really great story. And as an immunologist who does laboratory research, it's amazing how little we knew about the power of T cells and how recently, you know, we've really recognized how important a modality this is.
Nikhil, I'm curious how you explain sort of how cancer immunology works and what the body's normal defense mechanisms are that are involved with cancer.
There was a whole algorithm developed what is required for cancer to develop. And an important component of that is lack of immune response, because while the cancer is developing, the body recognizes those developing tumor cells as foreign and tries to fight it. And in the process of development of cancer, there are different changes that takes place and which are induced mostly by the cancer cells themselves, which prevents the immune cells from doing what they're supposed to do. So in an actively growing cancer, the immune system is prevented from doing the function. And so then when we want the immune cells to do something, we have to do two things. One is to get rid of those inhibitory mechanisms which cancers has that doesn't let the T cell function. And on the other hand, allow the T cell now to be able to recognize cancer as the enemy and try and fight it and kill it. In doing so, also make its own growth. So this balance between the two causes cancer. And as we will discuss today, the ability to overcome this change that has happened to even conquer the cancer in a very positive way.
So Bettina, I'm curious how you explain to patients sort of what CAR T therapy is and how it's actually done. Can you maybe just talk a little bit about, particularly about sort of the basis of it, you know, how it really works, Bettina?
Sure. So I think what is not unique to CAR T cell therapy, we experience this in stem cell transplant as well with our patient population, is different people will absorb different amounts of information when you give it to them. I'm seeing patients often in the inpatient setting when they're coming in for therapy and somebody has already addressed what the therapy is with them. My practice, how I approach it is when I'm admitting them and I'm doing their HMP when they're coming in, I prompt them by asking them, what is your understanding of what we're doing here? You're not being given a test or anything like that, but tell me what your understanding is. So I make sure that they understand they're going to be receiving some chemotherapy, that they're going to be receiving these cells, and then also that they have an understanding of the toxicities, including the risk for cytokine release syndrome and neurologic toxicity or ICANS. So we talk about the brief signs and symptoms of those. I make sure that they can teach it back to me. And I give an opportunity for both the patient and their caregiver to ask questions. Because in addition to the patients, we often have caregivers with them. We actually recommend a 24/7 family or friend to be there for support during treatment. So it's important that they understand as well, especially for the neurologic toxicity, because often the patient won't remember that or really know what's going on. So it's important that everyone involved understands.
So we're going to go through a few slides, but you can check those out later too. We're not going to go through every single slide that we sent you in the slide deck. But Sattva, maybe again, you can talk a little bit more, but maybe before you get to that, we had a poll question we were going to ask the audience. So here's the question, because, you know, is this relevant to you in your practice, the topic of CAR-T? So my question to you is, when's the last time you saw a patient in your practice who died of either large cell lymphoma, multiple myeloma, or ALL? So you would think that any patient who dies theoretically would be a candidate at some point in time. It'll be kind of curious to see. It looks like the vast, vast majority of our audience has seen patients like that and in the last 6 months or so. So I think this is going to be a very relevant topic for everybody tonight. Tiffany, can you talk a little bit about how you explain what CAR T therapy is to a patient?
Yeah, I mean, similar to what Patina said, is to try and break it down into simple terms, making sure that they understand what's going to happen, what the process is, making sure that they understand the side effects with CRS and the neurotoxicity. In myeloma, we don't see as much neurotoxicity as they see in lymphoma and leukemia, so it's not as much of a significant issue. However, they still need to be aware of it, and their family members need to be aware of what to look for, because a lot of times the family member may notice the slight alteration that a patient's having. And so it's really, really important that the caregiver that's with them is aware and knows what to look for.
And we're going to talk about some of the toxicity issues that come up. Very, very interesting. And we'll hear a lot about how they're actually managed. But let's keep going, though, in terms of sort of the biology. And Sattva, maybe you can talk a little bit about sort of what's going on, how we prepare CAR-T treatment and how it's helpful to patients.
Sure. So CAR-T cell therapy, it's a form of genetically engineered T cell therapy. You can see here in this cartoon on the left, you have a T cell. And we introduce an artificial receptor into this T cell, which is the CAR molecule or chimeric antigen receptor. And that's done with the help of a virus, usually either a retrovirus or a lentivirus. And once we infect that cell with this virus, it will express this artificial receptor, the CAR molecule, on the cell surface. And what that does is, if you see on the right, that artificial receptor helps it to recognize certain antigens on the surface of the tumor cell. And once it recognizes that antigen, it can do three different things. It will, the cells will start to multiply and proliferate. They can produce multiple different cytokines, which are helpful to mediate the antitumor effect, but also cause some of the inflammatory side effects that we see with these patients. And then most importantly, they kill the tumor cells, which you see here. And this is shown on this slide is as well. So on the left side is a normal T cell. So a normal T cell recognizes its target through the T cell receptor, which is the native normally expressed T cell receptor. On the right is what you see, the chimeric antigen receptor, which is the genetically engineered receptor. And it's called chimeric because it has two parts to it. There is the part that is expressed on the cell surface, which is the antigen recognition domain. And then there is a cytoplasmic part, which provides the activation signal to the T cell when the target antigen is recognized by extracellular domain. And here's the general treatment schema for CAR T cell therapy. So currently for the FDA approved products, the patients initially undergo leukapheresis, which is basically to harvest the T cells from the patient. And then once the product has been generated, which can typically take about 3 to 4 weeks, they receive the conditioning chemotherapy, usually with cyclophosphamide and fludarabine, which is given over 3 days on day minus 5, 4, and 3. And after 2 days of rest, they receive the CAR T cell infusion on day 0. And then the toxicities, which you'll hear more about, typically occur within the first 2 weeks after the infusion. So this is the most critical period to monitor these patients closely, either as inpatient or outpatient. And this therapy acts fairly rapidly. So we can generally see a good clinical response by 1 month. So usually the first tumor assessment is done by day 30.
So Nikhil, maybe you can talk a little bit more about the fact that there are different products. There's not just one CAR T product, there are several, and kind of what the difference is between the products.
So there are three components to CAR T. As the top component, the one in the top shown here, that is utilized to identify the specific tumor cells. So that looks at specific expressed molecule on the tumor cell, and it allows the CAR T cell to recognize the tumor cell. It could say targeting homing mechanism. So for lymphoma, CD19 is the commonest one. For myeloma, as you will see, BCMA is a common one. And there are many other similar target molecules being identified. And so that differentiates different CAR products. Number two, the signal two molecule mentioned in this figure is what is called co-stimulatory molecule that allows this tumor T-cell, immune cell interaction to happen more robustly. And here you can have CD28, you could have 4-1BB and some of the newer other molecules. And that may be the second difference between the various CAR product. The third component, signal one, is very similar across, which is CD3-zeta, which allows the T-cells to get activated and replicate and get bigger in number. And so based on what is specifically on the surface of the CAR T-cell is what is recognized as the type of CAR T-cell it is. And so the products may be different based on the surface molecule and the signal too. The name of the CAR T-cell, whether it is CD19 CAR T-cells or BCMA CAR T-cell, is based on what specifically on the tumor cell is being recognized by the CAR T-cells.
So we're going to move on in a second and talk about CASE and start to give you a flavor of what really happens to patients who get treated, particularly as it relates to toxicity. But Krishna, maybe you could just, rather than showing a whole bunch of slides and all the trials that have been done, you can just kind of put in perspective the kind of benefits that we're seeing in various populations. We're talking about myeloma, lymphoma, acute leukemia, in terms of how well patients respond when really they're running out of options.
Yeah, I think the best way to say this is that we're fortunate in pediatric leukemia to have gone from cure rates that were effectively zero at the beginning of the 1960s to maybe 20% in the beginning of the 1970s to now in children, and I'm an adult hematologist, but in pediatric leukemia, ALL, reliably 80 to 90% of patients or even higher are cured now with combination chemotherapy. And in lymphoma, the disease that Dr. Neelapu specializes in, we've gotten very good at curing a majority of patients who present with diffuse large B-cell lymphoma. So both of these diseases can be cured with combination chemotherapy approaches. But there are two subsets of patients, and fortunately, you know, one is more rare than others. The first one is a subset of patients who never responds, patients who are truly refractory, that is that they don't really respond to chemotherapy at all. The second is a group of patients that actually responds, that goes into remission and has a chance for a cure, but then they relapse. And again, many of those patients, if they relapse, can be cured with transplants for lymphoma and get chemotherapy and get high-dose chemotherapy and autologous transplants where they get their own cells back. Or for leukemia, they can get donor transplants or allogeneic transplants. But for patients who don't fit into those categories, they historically have had a terrible prognosis. And again, you know, we could go over different studies and different diseases. But in general, of those patients who are relapsed or highly refractory, typically no more than 20 or 30% of patients will even respond to chemotherapy. And the percentage of patients who actually achieve a complete response is typically less than 10%. And if you don't achieve a complete response in those diseases, you'll typically die within months. So we're talking about the background in which these diseases were introduced in these what we call pivotal trials, or the trials that led to approval, were highly terrible situations, curable diseases, but for relapsed and refractory patients, almost certain to die with their next line of therapy. So CAR T cells were put into these therapies, and in the vast majority of patients, actually, people achieve responses, and the majority of patients actually achieve complete responses. Unfortunately, not all of those patients are cured. Less than half of patients with the lymphoma and leukemia are cured now, but we're talking a dramatic, really fundamental, revolutionary difference relative to what we would expect.
So I should mention that, you know, Tiffany and Nikhil both focus on myeloma, and the CAR T is a little bit of a different story there, a different target. But again, Tiffany, just sort of macro in terms of seeing these patients in terms of the benefit, can you comment on what you've observed so far?
Yeah, I mean, I think for a lot of our patients, the CAR T has provided not just remission, but remission without treatment. And I think that's really important for our myeloma patients, because particularly once you've relapsed, patients are basically on indefinite therapy now from the time of induction all the way throughout their journey. They're on maintenance therapy, and then they relapse, and then they're on therapy again, and they just stay on it. Whereas if with CAR T, they're actually provided a treatment-free duration. And I think that's really important when we're talking about a patient's quality of life. And so while we're still anticipating to see the full benefits of CAR T, though we do know that those patients who get a complete response from CAR T are having long PFS and not only progression-free survival, but that's without treatment. And I think that's incredibly, incredibly important for our patients.
So I see that the chat room is starting to pick up a little bit. I encourage you to ask questions in there. Or someone asked the question about how the cells are collected and SOTFA responded. And, you know, another thing SOTFA about this is there's a little bit of a delay between the time you decide you want to give CAR T, you collect the cells and then bring it back to the patient. How much of a problem is that in terms of patient having disease progression while you're waiting?
Right. So I think for the current products that are FDA approved, they're approved for aggressive malignancies, both ALL and diffuse large B-cell lymphoma. So these patients can have rapidly progressive disease. So I think so the time is very critical. Currently, it takes us about a week to get insurance approval. Once we identify a patient, at that point, we schedule the leukapheresis for the cell collection. And after the cell collection, as I mentioned, it takes about 3 weeks to get the product manufactured. So during that time, if there is disease progression, we need to consider bridging therapy for these patients to be able to at least stabilize the disease and maybe also induce certain degree of response or debulk the tumor to some extent, which could potentially decrease toxicity for these patients. So currently, from the time we identify a patient to the time when we can infuse the product, it can take 5 to 6 weeks. So we don't really need to do the planning for that.
So let's bring in a little granularity how this really plays out. I met with each faculty person, this entire series of conferences, every single one of them. I spent an hour with the faculty ahead of time. We record a presentation. We chat. There's a lot of great content there. We're going to be releasing that this summer. It was really interesting chatting with Bettina because she's in the inpatient setting and really, you know, gets to see the way this process evolves. And when I saw that she had a case of a patient who was not able to receive blood products, that, of course, got my attention, which is the case for this 73-year-old lady. I think we talked about this case for about 20 minutes, but we're just going to pick out a couple aspects, and then you can watch Bettina's video and get all the other things that happened to this lady. But maybe you could just kind of summarize what happened with this woman, Bettina, where the issue, the fact that she wouldn't accept blood products fit in, and kind of what happened when she got treated.
This was a very lovely lady who presented to us for CAR T-cell therapy. She was referred from an outside physician to our institution. And in her prior treatment history, there was a point about a year ago where she was evaluated for possible referral for an autologous stem cell transplant. Anyone who works in stem cell transplant knows that if you get a stem cell transplant and we give you a very high-dose chemotherapy, you're very likely going to require blood products during the recovery process. Due to that and also the cadence of her disease, it was decided that an autologous stem cell transplant was not the best option for her. She came to us for CAR T-cell therapy. Unfortunate for her, at the very beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic. So she came into what we have as a hybrid outpatient clinic for her evaluation, and she got her first doses of chemotherapy before being admitted. And she got the chemotherapy. She stayed there for about an additional hour or two. And by the time she hit the inpatient floor and the nurses took her vitals on arrival, she was found to have a fever. So she required a very robust infectious workup prior to us continuing chemotherapy and eventually giving her CAR T cells. However, she did receive the cells. Afterwards, she developed fevers again about 2 days after, pretty early on average for lymphoma patients to be having fevers that early. So she received tocilizumab and steroids at that time, had a very nice response, had some mild issues, including some double vision and recurrent C. diff infection. When we were monitoring her inflammatory markers, they were rather high during this time. But overall, she tolerated treatment very well, went home just under 2 weeks after she got the cells. Her repeat imaging a month later showed CR. And she's currently at home with her family, her adult children who take care of her and she lives with, having some issues with recurrent infections, but overall doing pretty well.